Another Sunday, another week in our series Foolproof. As you know, we've been working our way through Proverbs, and we've looked at pursuing wisdom, taking initiative, doing good, developing discipline, speaking truth. And today, we are going to spend some time talking about friendship and choosing our friends wisely. So thanks, Gabe, for the reading. We're going to, as he said to us before, talk about walking with the wise and becoming wise, because a companion of fools suffers harm. So I've been thinking about this verse and its meaning for us. And a couple weeks ago, as I was preparing and thinking about the sermon, I walked around the office and I asked some of my colleagues, what are some good qualities of a good friend? And my extensive research in the office revealed that things such as loyalty, kindness, compassion, care, trustworthiness, vulnerability, wisdom are important qualities of a good friend. And so I was thinking about these things and did some Bible research, as you do when you prepare a sermon. And it turns out that Romans 12:9-21 is a good summary of all of these qualities. So we're going to have the text behind me, just so if you forget what we're talking about, it's just here. But let's talk about Romans for a minute so we can figure out what this means. Paul is writing to them, and his purpose in chapter 12 is to exhort his audience to choose good over evil, to choose good over evil. And in this chapter, he is spending some time describing the meaning of sincere love, what it means to honor others above yourself. But let's think about this for a second, because the culture and society of the time is heavily reliant on this honor and shame system. There's a great disparity between the rich, the governors, the leaders, and the common people. And sickness, background, heritage, ethnicity, all of it played into whether you were honored and respected or marginalized and rejected. And so Paul, when he's describing sincere love, this principle of honoring others above yourself, he's going against the current radically. What he's saying is so countercultural, and it still is today. As you know, our Western society is concerned with getting more, making more money, building our careers, very individualistic goals. But here, Paul is challenging the people of Rome to a life of communion, of unity, togetherness, to live for one another, honoring each other in such a way that our own individual needs don't matter so much. And see, the church was not really united. The Gentiles, the Jews, they didn't really get along. They actually fought quite a bit. But Paul was calling them to higher standard, a different way of living, a way of living with each other under one name, the name of Jesus Christ. So at this point, you're probably thinking, Jane, I thought this was a series on Proverbs. Why are you talking about Romans? Fair enough. Well, Paul is drawing from the Proverbs when he's writing to Romans, especially Proverbs 25, verses 21 to 22, which speaks about the reward that awaits someone who extends kindness to their enemies. So Paul is not making up some new principles to live by. He's drawing from Old Testament scriptures and from the life of Jesus to challenge the Romans to living foolproof lives. And so in order to do this life together well, just like Paul gets inspired by wisdom literature, let's look at what the scriptures are saying. And we're going to look today at five things that Paul tells us about what it means to be good, wise friends. So firstly, good friends love deeply. From our Bible reading today in the Message translation, love from the center of who you are. Don't fake it. In the NIV, it says, love must be sincere. In the Amplified, it says, love must be sincere and active. The real thing, without guile or hypocrisy. And Eugene Peterson, the author of the Message paraphrase, paints a beautiful picture of sincere love and what it means. It's going to come up on the screen. God's great love and purposes for us are all worked out in messes, in our kitchens and backyards, in storms and sins, blue skies, the daily work and dreams of our common lives. God works with us as we are and not as we should be or think we should be. And I think that's a beautiful picture of how we are to deal with people. In the same way that God works with us as we are, we need to work with people as they are, not as we think they should be. We need to work with people as they are, not as we think they should be. And that thought really challenged me as I was preparing the sermon. We've got to love people authentically, truthfully, not trying to change them, not trying to fix them, not trying to get them to fit into a mold. And for the Jews, the challenge was to love the Gentiles. They were not Torah specialists. They were not very well versed in the scriptures of the Old Testament. They probably didn't follow the Sabbath or some of the traditional Jewish guidelines that a good Jew would follow. But the Gentiles were still to love them. Deep love is also can also be called warm affection, genuine care and respect, devotion to one another. It required action. Love moves us. It grows us. It changes who we are. It makes us better people. Proverbs 27, verse 1, you would know it well, says, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." When we love deeply, we sharpen each other. We help each other to grow. Now, living away from my family, and especially from my parents for a few years now, I've learned a lot and I've had a lot of time to think about what they've taught me growing up. And there are things growing up that I was not allowed to do. There are things that I was allowed to do. And when I think about it retrospectively, I know that they had put things in place to protect me, to care for me. And at the time, it may have been annoying, it may have been frustrating. I may have misunderstood what they were trying to do, but they were sharpening me. They were calling me to higher standards. And today I'm grateful for the lessons that they've taught me. And the sharpening happens through truth-telling as well, which JB told us about last week. He told us that the way that we tell truth matters, that truth should bring healing, truth should uphold comfort. And I think that in that, the sharpening takes place. So loving deeply not only means sharpening each other, but it is something that is incredibly sacrificial. It's dying to self. It's countercultural. John 15:13 says this, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." And Christ is the ultimate example of this greater love. So I pray and hope that we'd be the kind of friends who follow after Christ's example, that we'd build our life upon his great love, that we'd be good friends who love deeply. Secondly, good friends don't quit. They stick around in hard times. They keep checking in. They are steadfast in praying and keeping full of God. Steadfast in praying and keeping full of God. They are resilient, always around the corner. They're faithful. And when a problem arises, they don't leave, but they seek reconciliation. Our passage today says, "Keep yourselves fueled and aflame. Be alert servants of the Master, cheerfully expectant. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder." And in the NIV, "Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer." Now, I'm not saying that every friend that we have will never leave us. Seasons change. Some friends are friends for a season, and they're faithful and prayerful during that season. But here I'm talking about faithfulness and resilience as attributes. Good friends don't quit. They're not perfect, but they keep trying. They keep coming back to the altar. They accompany you in hope, in affliction, and in prayer. In other words, good friends laugh and cry with you. They share in all seasons of life. Now, again, what Paul was saying was not new. It was common in Jewish tradition to share in the joys and in the difficulties of one's life. Funerals, wedding celebrations were a common time of sharing one's season. But you know what it did? It built unity. The coming together of people to celebrate or mourn, it built unity, and it still does today. Paul was telling the Gentiles, who were not best friends with the Jews, as we found out, to share in their celebrations. No matter their status, origin, background, come together, setting aside agendas, opinions. Come and share in the joy or the tears of those around you. And Paul keeps at it. He insists, and he quotes from Proverbs 25, "If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Or in the Message, "Your generosity will surprise your enemy with goodness. Don't let evil get the best of you. Get the best of evil by doing good." Feed your enemy. Give him something to drink. Very practical, isn't it? Kindness and the way in which we respond to those around us breaks the cycle. And here I want to spend a couple of minutes just talking about the word enemy and what it means, what it meant at the time. Because for us, when we think enemy, we think of someone that we don't get along with or someone who's hurt us. But enemy at the time was a much broader term. It actually referred to all those who were outside of our companionship circles. So anyone that was not a friend was an enemy. And so God is calling us to be a little bit more inclusive, to love all those around us, whether we get along or not. Being kind and generous feels good. And that's what David told us about a few weeks ago. Doing good feels good. It feels good not only for the one who does it, but also for the one who received it. So good friends love deeply. They do not quit. They laugh and cry with us. And they are generous in grace, kindness, and care. Grace, kindness, and care make a huge difference. There are so many stories I could tell you of how blessed I have been by those around me. Friends and family, strangers, people I didn't know so well, who have blessed me beyond words. Extended kindness, care, and grace through a card, a text, an act of service, a thoughtful gift. All these things matter. But it's not just with our actions and our words that we can be generous. It's in our attitude towards others. Our passage tells us to be inventive in hospitality. Now, to make sure that you're not falling asleep, I want to hear some definitions or some synonyms of being hospitable. Ian, do you have an idea of what else does hospitable mean? Yeah, invite someone home. So inviting, what else? Yes, at the back. Yeah, sharing a meal with someone, going somewhere. What else? Hospitable. Yes, Ray? Yes, why not? Serenading someone. But also being generous, cordial, friendly, kind, gracious. And so my hope and prayer is that I can be hospitable, not just when I have people over at my house, but in every conversation, that I can be generous in extending grace, kindness, and care, whether it be over the counter at the grocery store, whether it be when ordering a coffee, whether it be on the road, when patience is wearing thin. Everywhere we are to treat people with such love and warmth that it does not make sense. Because as followers of Christ, we have been invited to live differently. We have been invited to live differently. Colossians 3, verses 13 to 17 say this. So chosen by God for this new life of love, dress in the wardrobe God picked out for you. Compassion, kindness, humility, quiet strength, discipline. Be even-tempered, content with second place. Competitive people said, amen. Quick to forgive an offense. Forgive as quickly and completely as the Master forgave you. And regardless of what else you put on, wear love. It's your basic all-purpose garment. Never be without it. How we treat people matters. And you know what? People are people. They're going to fall short. How do I know? Because I do. I fall short all the time. But in those moments, you know what's kept me going? What's kept me coming back to the altar? What's kept me coming back to Jesus? The generosity in grace, kindness, and care that people have extended me. The way people have forgiven me quickly and completely when I didn't deserve it, when I failed them or disappointed them. And that's ridiculous. Doesn't make sense. But that's the love of God. And when we can love like that, lives are changed. So I'm not sure whether I shared this story with you before or not, but when I lived in the States, I met a man called Dean. And Dean had a profound impact over my life. He was one of the leaders at the mission center I was at the time. And one of the things I loved most about him was that he always spoke so highly of everyone he met. It didn't matter who they were, where they were from, whether they were nice people or not. He just loved them and chose to continually see the good in them. Our passage says, bless your enemies, no cursing under your breath. Never did I hear Dean speak negatively about anyone. Never did I hear him complain about anyone. Not because he was a good guy, but because Jesus had transformed his life, had done some work in him. And he would wear this t-shirt I'm wearing today, which says Lifestyle Christianity. And when Dean passed, his wife was kind enough to send it to me. So that when I wear it, I'm reminded that it matters how I speak to people. It matters how I treat people, how I represent Christ in my day to day. Do you know that we're actually people's experience of church and of God? And when I think about that, it challenges me. Because when I'm out there talking to someone that I don't know, when I meet a stranger, I'm representing Christ and I'm representing the church. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to give them a negative view of church or of God. It's important how we treat people. So I'm not saying that you can't ever complain or speak out your frustrations. It's okay to have safe spaces to do so. But talk to a mentor, talk to a trusted friend, or lament in your journal or to God, like JB was telling us to do last week. Just like Dean, good friends bless their enemies. They discover beauty in everyone. I want you to think about that for a moment. They discover beauty in everyone. It's not an easy thing to do, is it? It's challenging. It's so much easier to point fingers, to raise our complaints, our frustrations. But what if we were different? What if we were different? What if we spoke of people so highly that people would remember years down the line? What if instead of complaining to our neighbors and our friends, we prayed? We prayed. We prayed over those who have hurt us, disappointed us, or who have worn our patience thin. Scott McKnight says this: first, we are to seek peace in our local fellowship, to end strife and to seek reconciliation with God and with one another. And out of this peace-shaped kingdom-shaped church, we spill over peace into the world. It's time to lay down the walls and seek reconciliation. Those things that have kept us apart, what if we laid them down at the foot of the cross? Family, friends, people who have hurt us, what if we, today, we decided to lay it all down at the cross? Clean slate, fresh start. It starts with us. It starts with us. So in all things, I hope that we take up the challenge to be good friends, to be a people of God who love deeply, who do not quit, who pray again and again and again, who laugh and cry with those around us, who are generous in grace, kindness, and care, and who bless our enemies and discover beauty in everyone. I pray that's who we are. And I hope and pray that we surround ourselves with people who do the same, who love deeply and who bring us back to the ultimate example of this great love, Jesus Christ, the one whom we worship and adore. That we surround ourselves with people who laugh and cry with us, who are generous in grace, kindness, and care towards all people, and who help us to bless our enemies and to discover beauty in everyone, and who call us out when we don't. So we're going to sing these beautiful words, "This is my desire to honor you." And I pray that this would be our prayer, that in everything that we do, our desire would be to honor Christ, to represent him with the way we talk, with the way we are with people around us. Let this be the cry of our heart so that we would grow in wisdom. Amen.